If you want to take out your Bibles and open up to 1 Peter chapter 5, we're going to start there this morning. I think as we read through 1 Peter 5, we're going to start in verse 6 here in a moment. I think you'll understand where I got the title Spiritual Lions from. That may sound like an odd term to you, and it sounds like an odd term to me too. But I think you'll find that it comes right out of the context of what we're going to read this morning. To see here in 1 Peter chapter 5, look at verse 6. It says, "Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you at the proper time." Our goal in Jesus is to humble ourselves under, and here the way it talks about, under the mighty hand of God. And always think of the imagery of a people who say, "I will lower myself down below under God's mighty hand." And then he says, so at the proper time, God's mighty hand will lift you up and grab you up and move you. But it will be at his time and his timing and not ours, to be reserved for what he desires, for those who will humble themselves under his hand, to do his will and not to choose their own. Then, here comes verse 7. It says, casting all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. Anxiety, this Greek word carries with it the idea of being pulled in two directions at once. The idea is that we look at what's going on physically and we want to get pulled toward one thing, but we look at it through the promises of God and we want to be drawn toward another, but we're not going to let go of either. It almost reminds me of being a kid when two uncles would each grab one hand and they would each pull you apart. And you could feel the strain through your chest. That was anxiety. You're getting pulled in two directions at once. That's what happens within our minds and our hearts when we want to hold on to something physical while trying to kind of hold on to God too. That's anxiety. It's the worry, it's the concern, it's the uncertainty. Here, Peter says, here's what you do with anxiety. If you've ever wondered, what's the Christian response to anxiety whenever it comes in? He says, cast all your anxiety on him. Throw it away from you. Cast it on him. Give it to him. It's not like the fishing idea where you cast the lure just so that you can reel it back in. It's the idea of cast it on him and let it go. Cut the line. Let it be finished. Reasoning being, he cares for you. He's not just going to let you go and say, well, I'm not going to take care of you. Just realize that God cares for us. The people that humble themselves under his mighty hand. So at the proper time, he will lift us up. And if there's ever any anxiety about it, cast it on him because he cares for you. Then take a look at the next verse. Here's verse 8. Be of sober spirit. You want to know what anxiety will do to you? It will drunken you up. Anxiety will come over your heart and it will make you turn to a drunken stupor in your mind. You won't be aware anymore. If we don't cast anxiety away, it grabs a hold of us and it changes things that are going on before you to where you don't even see what's really going on anymore. He says, be of sober spirit. Be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. Be on the alert. Somebody just, be on the alert. We go, for what? What are we on the alert for? He says, be of sober spirit. Be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion. That may sound rather odd to you. Whenever you think of prowling, you probably think of someone going in stealth and they don't want to be seen, don't want to be noticed. But if you notice about this picture, he says, prowls around like a roaring lion. How many of you think you could not notice a roaring lion? I saw a quick video this week of, seemed like probably an animal sanctuary, and these two lions were were there in the road, and the people had kind of gotten their cars around them, and they had the video cameras out. They'd rolled the windows down, and they were watching. And that lion just popped its tail up and let out one roar, and everything just suddenly crashed back. I thought about playing a lion's roar this morning, but I was trying to figure out how we'd clean up all the pews. But you start to consider a roaring lion. Anxiety can come over you so much that you would not even pay attention to a roaring lion. That tells you how difficult and how hard to overcome spiritually we can become whenever we're so concerned with anxiety and no concern for putting all of our faith in God. The picture here is the devil prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. And that's what lions do. They don't go after the fastest of the herd. They go after the weakest. They go after the ones who are not paying attention. They go over the ones who are drunken in spirit, not with alcohol, anxiety. Now, taking these couple of verses, if you look over my head, you can probably see a couple lines right now. The idea, I want to show you these. In 1 Peter 5, it describes the devil as a prowling, roaring lion. We'll look at it later. But there are other places where it talks about Jesus as being a lion. Spiritual lions. Here they are. One prowls around, roaring, seeking someone to devour. Jesus, the lion from the tribe of Judah, is an almighty lion. He's a lion king. But I want you to consider these things about anxiety, because it makes you ask the question, which lion is yours? Look back at the book of Daniel, at the verses that were read a few minutes ago. Look at Daniel chapter 6. Look at verse 1. I hope this is a very familiar story to you, but if it's not, we'll try and make it a little bit more familiar in the next few minutes. Daniel is a captive. He's been taken away from Jerusalem. He's over in what we would consider to be Babylon, but we'll get a better idea here in a moment. The Babylonians have already been cast out. Now it's time for the Medes to come in. Darius is the king. And so here's the picture. Daniel's already been through quite a few things. He's gained some renown among the people. Maybe not with the king so much. Daniel chapter 6, verse 1. It seemed good to Darius to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom, that they would be in charge of the whole kingdom. Now, in Babylon, there were 127 provinces. So 120 satraps, if you want to think of these guys kind of like governors over a province, that'll do you fine. It's not the exact idea, but we don't want to spend 15 minutes hammering that out. Verse 2. Says, and over them three commissioners. Makes you imagine probably three groups of 40 satraps. A commissioner, says three commissioners, of whom Daniel was one, that these satraps might be accountable to them, that the king might not suffer loss. The king doesn't want to be concerned about dealing with all this stuff. So he sets these satraps over like governors over those 127 provinces. And then he has three men, Daniel and two others, who are the commissioners, who were over those governors or satraps. Verse 3. Then this Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners and satraps because he possessed an extraordinary spirit, and the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. Do you see how far advanced Daniel is? Back in Daniel chapter 1, it talked about because of Daniel's willing to humble himself under God's hand, that God had given him favor. Sometimes we get that too. Whenever we humble ourselves under God's hand to do His will, we find favor with other people. And sometimes it's unexplainable. Like, why would they ever care for me? I haven't done anything for them, but they sure seem to like me. Daniel's got that kind of favor. Here he is, he's on an equal plane with two other commissioners, the 120 satraps underneath them. And Daniel is finding favor because they see that there's an extraordinary spirit in him that's unlike anybody else in the whole kingdom. The other two commissioners grow jealous. They start doing like what their father, what their spiritual lion would do. They start prowling around. They know who they want to devour. It's Daniel. They're jealous. They're envious. Notice the idea here in verse 3 as it continues. Verse 4. Then the commissioners and satraps began trying to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to government affairs. But they could find no ground of accusation or evidence of corruption as much as he was faithful. And no negligence or corruption was to be found in him. They said, well, we'll just find something according to our law, and then we'll just nail him to the wall and it'll all be over. Well, they start looking around and figuring out, Daniel hasn't left anything unturned. He is faithful. He's faithful to submit to the governing things that are there as long as they don't go against his God. They look, they're trying to find, and they find nothing at all. Nothing whatsoever. There's a lesson in that for us too. We can't think that, you know, I'm devoted to the Lord, so I don't have to carry about in this other stuff. Well, being faithful to the Lord carries through with your whole life. About what you do at your job, what you do at your home, what you do with your grandchildren. Daniel is that way. He humbled himself under God's mighty hand. And here he is protected. Here he is taken care of. Even though the other spiritual lion, the devil, through these commissioners and satraps, is saying, we don't want you to be over the entire kingdom. We've had enough of that. We don't want it. Let's see if we can find a way to get rid of you by envy and jealousy, pry you out of office. Look at verse 5. Then these men said, we will not find any ground of accusation against this Daniel unless we find it against him with regard to the law of his God. We're going to need some law higher than ours. Ours is not going to touch Daniel. He's honest, he has integrity, he deals with people well, the people even love him. We're going to have to find something against the law of his God. Isn't that something? To have the people that you're surrounded by want to take you down so much that they're willing to study your scripture to see, try and find something wrong with you. That doesn't sound all bad, except for their aim and their goal. Verse 6. Then these commissioners and satraps came by agreement to the king and spoke to him as follows. King Darius, live forever. All the commissioners, now it says all, I think it's all the rest. All the commissioners of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps, the high officials and the governors have consulted together that the king should establish a statute and enforce an injunction that anyone who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days shall be cast into the lion's den. We've all got together, king, and this is what we've decided. Everybody's on board. We've talked to the commissioners. We've talked to the satraps. We've talked to the prefects. Says, we got them all. Here's what you need to do. If anybody bows down, prays to, or worships anybody other than you, King Darius, O live forever, they should be thrown into the lion's den. Well, verse 8. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document, so that it may not be changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which may not be revoked. Now you read that may not be revoked, and it means it's not going to be revoked. And that was a pretty good law at the time. It kept lawmakers from making up all these little laws that went with everything, because look, this is not stuff not going to change. It makes you consider what you're actually going to pass. What effects is it going to have later? What effects is it going to have now? Does it do anything for the past? Here are these laws they have. Consider the thought. Sign it, put it into office, it'll be effect for the next 30 days. Verse 9. Therefore, King Darius signed the document, that is the injunction. He says, okay, that sounds fine with me. If you guys have all looked at it, that's okay. Verse 10. Now, when Daniel knew that the document was signed, notice he knew it. He had been made aware. I'm sure it was the conversation about the commissioners and the satraps and everything else. It says, he entered his house. Now in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem, toward the west. And he continued kneeling on his knees three times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God, as he had been doing previously. Do you notice that nothing changed for Daniel? He doesn't say, oh, now everything's different. Daniel says, you know what? I'm going to humble myself under God's mighty hand. I've prayed through him three times a day ever since I've been in this forsaken land. And I'm going to keep doing that. Because that is honorable. That is right. According to the old commandments that he lived under, hey, you weren't supposed to bow down and worship or pray to anybody else other than the Almighty God. He keeps on. Verse 11. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God. Petition. To ask for the same thing over and over again. That's what a petition is, right? Sometimes we do that in prayer. Whenever we ask someone to pray for us, we're asking a lot of people to pray the same thing for us. That's a petition. Supplication. The idea of asking for God to supply something that you lack. I wonder what Daniel was asking for. What was he asking God to supply that he knew he couldn't control or didn't have himself? I don't know the answer, but let's keep going. Verse 12. Then they approached and spoke before the king about the king's injunction. Did you not sign an injunction that any man who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days is to be cast into the lion's den? Isn't this what you said? Didn't you sign this injunction? Isn't that what you put into the law of the Medes and the Persians? It can't be revoked. It can't be changed. The king replied, statement's true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which may not be revoked. He says, you're right. Almost as if to say, you're right. What's that got to do with me? Where are we going with this? Verse 13. Then they answered and spoke before the king. Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the injunction which you signed, but keeps making his petition three times a day. He says, well, it's time to uphold your law. You signed it. This is what you wanted. You wanted, yeah. Verse 14. Then as soon as the king heard this statement, he was deeply distressed and set his mind on delivering Daniel. And even until sunset, he kept exerting himself to rescue him. Darius doesn't like what he's done. Darius can see, I got railroaded here. All these governors, all these satraps, all these other two commissioners set me up. And now whenever he hears that he's going to have to throw Daniel into the lion's den, he's deeply distressed. He knows what's in Daniel. He knows that Daniel is so different. Why would any king cut off his best man? That makes no sense. It even says here, he set his mind to deliver Daniel. He says, I don't want Daniel to go through this. He says, well, it wouldn't hurt this one time not to do that, would it? You signed the law. It can't be changed. It can't be revoked. You signed the injunction that specifically says. Verse 15. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, recognize, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or statute which the king establishes may be changed. You can't even change it if you want to. Now, I don't know what these commissioners and satraps hope to gain by really making the king angry, but it's not going to turn out well. These commissioners and these satraps have put David in the target. They're just like that old devil who's prowling around seeking someone to devour. And they say, we don't want him to be king, right underneath the king over all the kingdom. We'll set him up. Anybody ever set you up? Anybody ever tried to lay out the plans where it looks like everything is your fault when you have done nothing? Whenever you get in that kind of situation, maybe it's at work, maybe it's within a family dynamic, Maybe it's even in the community. Does anxiety want to sink in? Do you want to get worried and concerned about everything? Do you start getting pulled in two directions of seeing where things are going physically, and yet you wonder about what God's promised, if He'll do it for you in your life? Do we cast that anxiety on Jesus because He cares for us? Or do we try and figure it all out and work it? The king realizes he's been set up and there's nothing that he can do. He wants so badly to tell them, I might sign a new law. Deeply distressed, wants to deliver Daniel. Then it comes verse 16. Then the king gave orders, and Daniel was brought in and cast into the lion's den. The king spoke and said to Daniel, your God whom you constantly serve will himself deliver you. Does that sound amazing to you? That King Darius has faith in Daniel's God? It says, these lions won't be anything for your God. May he deliver you. Now the king's distressed. The king has anxiety. The king's got it. He doesn't want Daniel killed, but he has to hold to this law. He's held right in the middle. He feels the anxiety, but he's got nowhere to go with it. Except to say, Daniel, may the God whom you constantly serve deliver you from the lions. Verse 17. A stone was brought and laid over the mouth of the den. It seems from the details we have that this lion's den is almost like a deep pit. The lions are kept at the bottom. They're probably not given very much food from time to time. And they're kept there. And they took this stone and they put it over the mouth, the opening of that pit. Even sealed it. It says, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signet rings of his nobles, so that nothing would be changed in regard to Daniel. Nothing. Here Daniel is. Verse 18, here's the effect of the king. Then the king went off to his palace and spent the night fasting, and no entertainment was brought before him, and his sleep fled from him. He fasts. What happens whenever we get so anxious about something that is out of our control, that we can't change? Do we make these drastic moves? Do we feel so much self-pity that we stop eating? Do we say, you know, I'm not going to go to the party. I don't even want to go out. We get so shut down with the anxiety. Normally we see fasting and we think of somebody making a spiritual move toward God. Sometimes people don't eat because they're so depressed, because anxiety has just grabbed them so hard. Fasting isn't always spiritually minded. It says, no entertainment brought in for the king. Unplug the TV, turn off the cell phone, take the phone off the hook, shut down the internet. Nothing. Why would you do that? Here's the king. The Almighty King, powerless. Verse 19. Couldn't even sleep at the end of verse 18. Anxiety ever do that to you? Steal your sleep away? Verse 19. Then the king arose at dawn at the break of day and went in haste to the lion's den. He ran. What makes a king run? He ran. Verse 20. When he had come near the den to Daniel, he cried out with a troubled voice. The king spoke and said to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you from the lion? Has he? Will he? Does he have the ability? What has he done? I want to know the conclusion. anxiety ever do that to you? I just want to know how this thing is going to turn out. Because I don't know from here. Here's the king. He runs out to the den where Daniel is. And he says, surprisingly, the living God that you serve, has he been able to deliver you? Humble yourself under the mighty hand of God so that at the proper time, he'll lift you up. That's 1 Peter 5, right? It says in Hebrews chapter 11, around verse 33, that by faith the mouths of lions were shut. What's Daniel's disposition through all of this? I serve my God. I humble myself under his hand. You set up your plans. You do whatever you're going to do and throw me in that pit. I'll see you tomorrow. Don't hear any anxiety in Daniel, do you? We want to play Daniel up to say, he's scared to death. He falls in that pit and he's looking around going, ooh. He's not. He's cast all of his anxiety on the Lord. He says, you'll deliver me. I know you will. I've humbled myself under your hand. I know you'll lift me up. I know you'll take care of me. Whenever Daniel was sitting down in that lion's den and he saw those lions and their teeth, he said, hello, kitty. There's no worry. There's no concern. So often if we're in anxiety, we see these things and we go, ah! That's not faith. That's anxiety. Faith says, I've humbled myself under God's hand. I'm just waiting for the right time, and he's going to lift me up. I'll do it when he says it's time, not me. We're not anxious like this king, not by faith. Verse 21, here's the king. He'd probably been thinking about this moment all night long and wondered which way it would turn out. Then Daniel spoke to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they have not harmed me, inasmuch as I was found innocent before him, and also toward you, O king, I have committed no crime. The Lord took care of me. The angels that are sent to render service for the sake of those who are going to inherit salvation. Hebrews 1 says, he says, God took care of me. No worries. I'm blameless before you and before my God. Verse 23. Then the king was very pleased. I think that's a funny way to say it. And gave orders to Daniel to be taken up out of the den. You see him coming up? He gets lifted up out of a den. Midst of all these hungry lions. It says, and no injury whatever was found on him because he had trusted in his God. I don't know if it was the king, I don't know if it was the others. They gave Daniel the physical examination. They looked all over his body to say, where are the teeth marks? Where did they gnaw at you? There weren't any. None. None whatsoever. Verse 24. Because he trusted in his God. Verse 24. The king then gave orders, and they brought those men who had maliciously accused Daniel, and they cast them, their children, and their wives into the lion's den. If you as a parent think you don't have an effect on your family, your children, even your mate, you are terribly misguided. Notice, they take them, their wives, and their children. And they had not reached the bottom of the den before the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. That's kind of gruesome. All right, I'm going to take you to a place for a moment. We'll come right back. You ever broken a bone? You ever been around when somebody broke a bone? A lot of times you don't have to be a doctor to know it, just from the sound of it. These lions overpowered and devoured these people. If we're the disbelieving, we say, well, the lions just weren't hungry, that's why they didn't bother Daniel. They sure sound mighty hungry now. And snapped their bones. Here is Daniel setting up above on the ground, the pit, looking down. Here is the king. Daniel has said, because I humbled myself under God's hand, he has lifted me up and protected me. I'm innocent toward you and toward my God. No crime. And then to see them thrown in, and then to hear the lions, to hear the bones snap and break, would it have an effect on you? Would it have your attention? Spiritually, would we ask ourselves the question, have I humbled myself under God's hand to do what He desires? So that at the proper time, when the plans are against us, when there's no power on our own to overcome, His hand turns and lifts us up. Jesus is described as the lion from the tribe of Judah, the overcomer, the Almighty. He has power where we don't. Our responsibility and anxiety, cast it all on Him. Or you can cast it to the other spiritual lion, and you'll get all these other things that we saw in the king. If that's the kind of life you want, it can be yours. Sleeplessness. Hey, no entertainment. I'm not going to eat. I'm so sick. Worry. Or we can look at the lion from the tribe of Judah, humble ourselves under him, and when the time is right, we cast all that anxiety on him because he cares for us. And then he will lift us up at the best time. Which one do we take by faith? Don't be intimidated by the lions. Only humble yourselves under the hand of God. That's what we need.